Speak Out on the original Speak Out radio show. Speak Out is a public affairs program that serves you, our listeners, and the community you live in. Speak Out is all about listener participation. So call in anytime during the show. 928-854-5687. That's 854-5687. Speak Out on KNTR Talk is heard on 106.7, 5, and 3. You can also listen at KNTRTalk.com and listen anywhere through the TuneIn radio app. From elected officials, community leaders, small business owners, school district representatives, and charitable causes, Speak Out is here for you on KNTR Talk. Who did the world of professional wrestling recruit as the ultimate heel? Forming the Dangerous Alliance and body slammed his way into immortality.
Yo, Bali!
When Atlas needed a break from holding up the world, who did the gods of Mount Olympus beckon?
Yo, Bali!
Now, this worldly ex-grappler has settled behind the microphone once again for your benefit. Ladies and gentlemen, thank the gods he's only on the radio for an hour. Paul LaVoy.
His pronouns are he, him, and hungry. Really?
I had $1 million. If I had $1 million, well, I'd buy you a fur coat, but not a real fur coat. That's cruel. And if I had $1 million.
And I'm so old, I remember when fur coats were cool. Anyway, welcome to the show. It is Thursday, October 9th, 2025. That music, of course, means Sound Advice with Brian Springberg. Brian's truant today. I'm not going to say he's tardy, because I could go extreme with him since he's not here, right? Brian's truant. And we have two ladies first, and they are with Hospice of Havasu. Kind of a healthcare show today, because we've got the CFO from LifePoint Western Arizona Region, Doug Sagesser, is going to be on the show. That's a recorded segment. And then towards the end, I don't want to say that's a medical segment, but they're doing very well, knocking out opponents. Head coach Carl Thompson and the Lake Havasu High School Fighting Knights taking on Deer Valley tomorrow night in Deer Valley. I don't know where Deer Valley is, but I know what district it's in. So anyway, that should be a really good game, and they're 3-2. We're 5-1. So
there
you go. Right, go Knights! Right?
It's amazing.
Did you go to Havasu High?
No, I didn't.
You didn't?
I did. I graduated in 2014.
Perfect. That's Yesenia Ramirez. She is the transitions coordinator for Hospice of Havasu. Sorry, I was thinking the other one. And Ashley Huerta, the clinical services director for Hospice of Havasu. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
I thought I was getting Jenny Toker today.
Yeah, she's on vacation.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. In Hospice of Havasu, you guys are the only 5-star rated hospice provider
that is correct.
In the area,
yep.
Not just Havasu, right?
Correct, here in Bullhead City, which we do service both of those areas.
Well, we're Havasu here.
Correct.
Here and Bullhead City.
Yes.
Okay, very good. I didn't realize, what's the relationship market-wise between Havasu, Bullhead, as far as, you know, share goes with your clients? Would you say 50-50?
Havasu is definitely our bigger location.
Okay.
We definitely service more patients here than we do in the Bullhead City area.
Okay, perfect. I know you looked at me like, what?
I wasn't quite sure what you're
asking.
That's
a Jenny question. That's perfect. All right, and let's talk to Yesenia a little bit. What does a transitions coordinator do?
So as a transitions coordinator, I work within our transitions program, which is for our community members who are not receiving hospice care, but because of chronic illness or maybe just normal aging, they're in need of support and resources, specifically to help them remain independent. So I meet with them in person, over the phone, usually in their home because they have a harder time leaving their home. But I just sit with them and talk to them about what's been going on, what's been changing, what's been difficult, and I try to connect them to the resources available in our community. So it's a lot of just information, guidance, emotional support, and we have a wonderful community with so many wonderful organizations and resources. So I try to get them connected to that. It's like having that social worker available to you for those folks that don't need hospice or may not be ready to take that next step towards hospice.
You're the liaison between the patient and the provider, yep. hospice to have.
Yeah, a lot of the time, you know, folks have questions or concerns, and they may not know how to bring it up with their provider. So we sit down and, you know, usually I suggest we'll make a list and, you know, what's most important to you and help. That way they can help communicate with their provider. And we have some wonderful providers in this community. So it's nice to be able to collaborate with them and the other resources in the community.
Right. I think we talked about this before, Ashley, but the clinical services director, mm-hmm. what is your what's the scope of your job then?
So I started out as a visit nurse, and I've been with hospice next week. Actually, I'll be there 11 years. But the actual wow. clinical services director, I oversee the clinical team. So supporting the nursing staff, the CNAs, and kind of helping out when I can.
People hear clinical and they mm-hmm. think of nomenclature. At least that's what I think of. That is words that are specific to your industry. What is clinical?
So we're essentially the team that is hands-on with the patient.
Oh, I see.
Providing that hands-on care, whether it's symptom management needs,
right.
collaborating with their, you know, physicians and our physicians. So just managing their medical care within their home setting.
Back in the day, when I first heard the word hospice, it was a bigger hospice in Vegas, number one. I don't want to say the name, but it was a facility, their own facility.
Sure.
Not so much in the home. Is that how much the industry, if you will, has progressed over the last 30, 40 years?
Absolutely.
Is it mostly home-based now?
I would say 90, 95% no is
kidding.
Within the home.
Mm-hmm. No kidding. And then tell me what's available for those people who might think they need hospice, but they're like, you know, well, I'm not, excuse the expression, I'm not dying.
Sure.
That's what we used to think. But you might be terminal or
exactly.
faced with a terminal illness.
That's exactly correct.
Okay.
You do not have to be imminently dying, but you do have to have a terminal diagnosis that's not going to get better or that you're not seeking treatment for. So you have a whole team that works with you. So we have our doctors and nurse practitioners that are 24 hours a day, our nursing staff's 24 hours a day, and our nurses are the ones that are providing, like I said, that hands-on care and managing their care and symptoms
right.
within the home setting. We have our CNAs that help with our showers, activities of daily living, social workers for those extra resources, support, helping with final arrangements,
wow.
Advanced directives. We have our great volunteer support. So if there's some respite that's needed, they can, you know, sit with the patients while the family gets a little break and can recuperate.
I'm glad you qualified that. A lot of people don't know what respite is.
Right.
But they don't realize, hey, I could be, you know, I'm helping mom get through this period, or I'm helping dad get through this period. They don't even realize they can use your resources, do
correct.
They?
So many people don't realize, because they do. Hospice has that stigma to it that, you know, it's your last few days. And
unfortunately
in some,
yeah.
it can happen, but that's usually
right.
because the patients or family decide not to utilize hospice earlier on. But that's why we always want people to call and reach out if they feel like they could use hospice. Because if they do qualify, a lot of times once they hear what the services are and what's available and that it is covered by their Medicare benefit,
right.
they really appreciate that support. And if for some reason, if they're not ready for hospice or they don't qualify, that's where we can talk to them about that transitions program and help with all those extra services out there that are available to them.
So talk about Medicare Care Compare.
Mm-hmm.
That's an organization that rated you, correct?
Yes, yes.
And we talked about that earlier coming into the
right.
show about this 5-star rating and how important it is.
Absolutely.
This was a big deal
it
to
is a
Sarah.
Big deal.
Sarah was like walking
yes.
on cloud nine, handing me the information. I didn't realize how big it was until I actually spoke to you guys.
Mm-hmm. It's a huge deal. And so you actually can go onto the Medicare Care Compare and you compare all of the different hospices. And so it rates them based off of their Medicare scores. And, you know, we've had it multiple times. So we are very, very proud of our 5-star rating.
Did they do like a ride along? How did they do the evaluation of the care?
It has to do a lot with patient and family surveys.
Oh, I see. Okay, so they would get feedback from mm-hmm. them, and it was high enough to give you the 5 stars.
Correct.
Very interesting.
Yes.
Talk about the Responsive Heart Hero Award.
Yes.
Who won that?
Angela Coleman. Very excited. I had the pleasure to go to Phoenix with her to accept this award. So she's been with us since 2017. She's very caring for patients and families. She has such compassion, responsiveness. And this award essentially is given to individuals who are exceptionally attentive to those of others, and they respond very promptly and quickly and effectively. So very, very proud that she got that. Well-deserved.
Accepted that in Phoenix.
Yep, we went down to Phoenix.
Okay. And then let's talk about what is the CAHPS honors recipient?
Yes.
It's CAHPS?
It is CAHPS. Okay. Yes. So this is a national recognition that provides.
For the organization.
For hospice. Okay. Yes. And so it highlights the hospice providers who deliver the highest quality of care based, again, kind of on those surveys on the patient and family feedback. So very proud of that one as well.
That's quite a high culture to attain to, Yesenia, as far as, I mean, you have a lot of dedicated people.
Yes, yeah.
How do you pick those out of the employment pool in this day and age when people are ghosting their interviews and that? You must know some or can see some really qualified candidates when they come along. Is there something that you're looking for?
Well, I don't do the hiring, but, you know, it's really nice to see, like with our team, Angela getting that award. Our team is just so passionate, and you have to be passionate to work in hospice care because it can be really tough. You're helping guide these families during one of the most difficult journeys that they're going to have, and so it's just finding that compassion, making sure they're compassionate people, that they can really help these families through these tough times.
I was going to say, what makes someone a good fit for Hospice of Havasu?
I would say that compassionate, mm-hmm. Understanding of the obstacles the families are going to face, because a lot of it is, the medical side helps supporting that patient through
right.
the end-of-life journey, but also the family, you know, making sure that we're able to support them to help them understand what's going on.
And a lot of times it is supporting the family actually more so than the patient sometimes, because the patients may not be having big changes or a lot of symptoms, but that family needs so much reassurance. Insurance, support, and education. I think another big one is flexibility.
Oh,
because mm-hmm. with hospice, we don't ever know what we're walking into. Things can change very rapidly, so definitely being very flexible in your schedule. And
what do you see the most as clinical services director? You see a lot of people come in and they don't know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think once they see the quality of care they're getting? As opposed to not the patient themselves,
sure.
but the family.
Yes.
Once they see that quality of care, what do you think you hear the most?
What I hear the most is, we wish we would have elected hospice sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. I've never had anyone wish that they wouldn't have elected hospice later on in the mm-hmm. disease progression. They've always said they wanted to do it sooner.
What stopped them, do you think? Was it the payment, they didn't know they had access to certain funds?
I really think it's the stigma of hospice. I really, truly do.
Really?
That they really think they have to be truly end stage or bed bound, not able to get out of their home.
Right.
So, you know, there's that's why we want to do these consultations, because I have no problem going to talk to somebody and explaining the services, kind of where they're at within their disease process, and
sure.
let them know what to look for in the future when hospice might be appropriate for them. So just giving them those education pieces is definitely important.
I think a big one, too, is that they feel they may be giving up on themselves
yep.
or their loved one, because they feel, well, we're stopping treatment.
Right.
You know, we're just giving up on them. But
that's not the case.
Exactly. Hospice comes in and changes that experience for them through this journey that's happening
mm-hmm.
no matter what.
Absolutely.
Is there a spiritual side or a
yes,
faith-based side to
absolutely.
This as well? Tell for those people who may want that in a provider or their caregiver. Explain that.
So we do. We have our spiritual and grief counselor. So she does, you know, both the spiritual side and the grief and bereavement part of it. And a lot of that starts in the beginning. You know, even if someone, you know, is not actively dying, they're losing themselves, the family's losing them. So having that extra support, she's great about reaching out, like if they have certain faith practices or,
sure.
You know, their own chaplains, mm-hmm. things like that, and not sure how to get a hold of them. You know, we're making those connections for them. And they don't have to have those services either, because some people, you know, are not spiritual or want to have that. So that is, you know, completely up to them. They are the driver of their own boat. So we're here just to help them with our journey and provide all of the services and tools that we can to make this the best experience for them and their family.
Oh, sure. I get it. All right. Let's go ahead and take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more with Yesenia Ramirez and Ashley Huerta. And Yesenia is the Transitions Coordinator for Hospice of Havasu. Ashley is the Clinical Services Director and does most of the talking between you two.
I'm kidding. She has it down with the clinical side. That's why she's the clinical director.
I wasn't sure who to go to. All I heard was nervous, and I didn't know who said it, but I was like...
Both.
But you guys have been on the show before.
And you make it a fun time, though.
But I haven't lost anybody
that.
Yet, right?
No, not yet.
That's right.
Not that we know of, anyway.
Well, right.
So what we're going to do is we're going to go to break. We're going to come back, do one more short segment. We're going to tell people, we have some more information. We were talking about red pepper jelly earlier.
Yes, holiday boutique.
Yes, that's coming up. I actually had a chance to try that stuff, and I ate Jim Russell's jar, too.
Well, you got to get him a new jar then.
No. I'll just say, give me a jar for Jim, and then he'll never get it.
There you go. So,
he said it was okay. Wink, wink. Right? All right, back with more in a moment. Give us a call if you have a question. You won't be able to call during the Doug Sagaser interview, but and you won't be able to talk to Coach, but you can talk to these two ladies, and it's 928-854-5687. I've been accused of saying the number too fast, by the way. 928-854-KNTR. We'll be right back on Speak Out. Stay with us. So that's from a folder on the iPad called Back to the 90s. Kind of a new thing we're doing on KJJ Nash 102.3 at night. Just some Phil songs from the 90s.
Can't beat 90s country.
Right? Back. Right? Everybody loves 90s. Yep. Every country fan I know loves 90s country. So there you go. Little Dina Carter, Strawberry Wine. I love that song anyway. Speak Out, brought to you in part by... Mojave Mortgage, love those guys. Also, Bradley Chevrolet and Bradley Ford, by Just Meats, Salmon's Air Conditioning, Springberg Wealth Management, Blonzy's Steakhouse on North London Bridge Road, and by AMB Propane, abpropaneaz.com. And I don't know if you know, ladies know this, but we're actually broadcasting from the City Maytag Speak Out Kitchen with no sink.
Oh.
It's a kitchen. It's a real kitchen, right? Like a break room?
Yeah.
We're in the break room, just kind of, you know, having the water cooler talk, right? And City Maytag is at 911 North Lake Havasu Avenue. And I want to talk about your Hospice of Havasu Crafters annual holiday boutique sale. That's a big deal.
It is a big deal, yes.
I walked into Hobby Lobby yesterday, and it smells like Christmas, which means...
Already?
Yes, the holiday season is almost here, which means our annual boutique craft sale.
What does Halloween smell like, though?
Pumpkin pie.
That's Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
that's true.
Okay, anyway, go ahead. I didn't mean to throw you
off.
Yeah,
no, so we have our annual Friends of Hospice at Havasu Crafters Holiday Boutique Sale, which is happening Friday, November 7th from 9 to 3 and Saturday, November 8th from 9 to 2. And it'll be at the Columbian Hall, which is on 186 London Bridge Road. And a little backstory, the Friends of Hospice at Havasu Crafters, they're a dedicated group of volunteers. They work all year long to make these beautiful one-of-a-kind items just for this special sale. And they have one-of-a-kind purses, jewelry, art, kitchen items. I bought my mom a nice little apron last year.
Aww.
She loves it.
She's a good daughter.
I'm trying to get those brownie points.
Yeah, exactly.
They also make these beautiful quilts. And, you know, for those people who already completed their holiday shopping, you know, they've done it throughout the year, kudos to you. I'm not one of those people. But if you have, they also will have the red pepper jelly jars and some home-baked goods available that you can take to your holiday gathering. So it's the perfect opportunity to get a jump start on that holiday shopping, but also support the patients and programs at Hospice of Havasu, and it's going to be all in one stop. So
I'm like a guy when it comes to Christmas, right? I don't like to wrap. I like it all ready to go. I like baskets.
Yes.
And especially if I could put wine in it, like for my mom or something like that, or for the my other band members. So I'll give them a good, you know, like a, I don't know, beef jerky basket, whatever, right? So it, any baskets people making those?
I have seen those baskets
at
past years, so I'm really hoping we see those. It's really nice. I mean, you can just go find the perfect gift. Like, It's like our tradition to take my mom on that Saturday to go pick something out because they spend all year working on these like one of a kind items. And they're beautiful.
I love that. I'm a November Christmas shopper anyway.
Yeah,
that's perfect. November 7th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. and Saturday, November 8th. So it's Friday and Saturday from 9 a.m. to I always say 9 a.m. on or 9 a. It starts at 9 a.m. because it'll go past a little past 2, right? It's not like you're telling people get out of here.
No, we won't kick them out.
Exactly. Exactly. So anything else that we missed before I let you go?
I think, again, just the big thing, questions, concerns about hospice care, interested to learn more, please reach out to Hospice of Havasu.
So is it hospicehavasu.org?
Yes, it
is. That's the website.
Yes.
Okay. You can pretty much learn everything there, folks. And the only reason I know so much is because we did a Hospice of Havasu Radiothon one time. It was like 5 hours.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah. That's an interview.
That is, definitely.
All right. We're going to go ahead and go to our next segment, and I'd like to thank these ladies for being here again.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yesenia,
right? Yes. Yesenia Ramirez, Transitions Coordinator, and Ashley Huerta. She is the Clinical Services Director. Ashley's on my good side because you like 90s country.
I do. I love it.
All right. Perfect. Thanks, ladies.
Thank you.
And we'll see somebody from Hospice Avenue next month.
Yep.
Probably Sarah. She likes to bug me.
She's awesome.
Thanks, ladies. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
All right. Back with more in a moment. And after the interview with Doug Sagesser, and again, it's recorded, so don't call in because you can't get on the air. We will have Coach Carl Thompson from the Lake Havasu High School Fighting Knights. They're going to Deer Valley, their last game on the road, in four in a row on the road. And Steve Greeley and Bill Beckman will be calling that game tomorrow night on the AM, 980 AM, and of course, KNTRSports.com. We'll be streaming there. All right, I'll be back with Doug in a moment. Stay with us on Speak Out.
Baby, what did you expect me to do? Just sit around and wait on.
Welcome back to Speak Out, brought to you in part by The Chair, Havasu Style Dining and Live Entertainment in a flip-flop atmosphere. Also, Mojave College, SamsGuns.com, Solar Power by Esme Electric, by Dorita's Place, the Lewis Team Remax by the Lake with Bobby and Julie Lewis, and Looky Lou's Antiques and Collectibles. Check out their website at LookyLou'sHavasu.com. And as promised, we have CFO Doug Sagesser. He is the LifePoint Western Arizona Region CFO, and that includes Havasu Regional Medical Center and Valley View Medical Center. And it's a second time on the show.
It is. Glad to be back.
And I'm so happy that you came in. And this is a recorded interview, by the way, folks, so do not call in. Unfortunately, because of your schedule, we couldn't take you live, but he wanted to go live.
I would prefer to be live. I always like taking questions from the community. I think it's one of the important parts of our roles in the community is to hear from the community.
Oh, we appreciate that. Absolutely. And that's why the show is called Speak Out, so people can call in and voice their opinion, that sort of thing. But we had a opening today with Brian Springberg not being here, and the government shutdown looming or still going on, as it were, and all this talk about the Affordable Care Act and the subsidies going away, and that's kind of what's being held hostage here in this deal. How does all of that contribute to, what are the impacts on your hospitals or hospitals across the country if that subsidy does go away?
Well, I think we'll see a spike in uninsured, which we had prior to the ACA originally. I will tell you the uninsured problem did not go away with ACA, so you know, don't kid yourself that it solved that problem.
No kidding.
And that's part of why they had to go to subsidies, because insurance works on something called risk pools. And the reason that ACA had to be subsidized is they did not make the risk pools big enough. Mm-hmm. And they tended to get the more unhealthy people, because that's why they didn't have insurance before. So the real solution to this long term is to change how we use the market, because the exchange is not a bad idea. It's just badly implemented. And so it's all about risk pools.
We were talking before this segment about the fatal flaw of the Affordable Care Act, and that was eliminating the individual plan.
Mm-hmm.
It's all group plan now. Why do you say that?
Well, because, again, if you would open up the exchange and say everybody has to buy their health insurance on the exchange, you're no longer getting it through your company. And the reason for that is I work for a very large company, 55,000 employees across the country. All it takes is for us to have five or six really sick people who have multi-million dollar or million dollar plus bills.
Like a cancer patient,
for example. Cancer patient or a stroke or a heart attack. And you get into a long-term situation where the risk pool isn't big enough. So that if I spend $100 million on health insurance for my 55,000 people, that has to be spread across those 55,000 people next year. If we made those risk pools the state of Arizona, the Southwest, the Midwest, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden you would see healthcare premiums come way down, you would get better plans, and the insurance companies would be incentivized to do more preventative care, because right now an insurance company uses statisticians, basically.
Actuators?
Actuaries. I couldn't think of the words.
Thank you.
Actuaries. Yes. To calculate that they know for a fact that you're going to change health plans every 3 to 5 years, because either your employer is going to change the plan you have, you're going to change employers, or you're going to retire and go on to Medicare or something else. So they have zero incentive to do preventative care. And I have a really good friend who's high up in one of the insurance companies, and we were talking the other day, and he's like, man, if I could get you at 18 and keep you till through Medicare, through an exchange-style setup, mm-hmm. now all of a sudden I'm incentivized to make you healthy.
And you had a good example for that. Car insurance. Back in the 70s, you could not sell car insurance like Geico. You couldn't
right.
sell it, or State Farm would be a better example in the 70s. You couldn't sell it state, you know, it had to be per state.
Right, it had to be.
Now they sell nationally.
Right, it had to be approved by the state. And I remember I started out driving in 82, and as a 14-year-old on a hardship license, that was very expensive. I mean, I paid more in a year for the insurance than I paid for the car.
Yeah, the only way I drove was because my mother was an adjuster at one time, and she figured it out how to make it cheaper right. for us. But anyway.
Right. But, and again, all I had was liability at that point. You know,
right.
if I did it, it was on my dime. But about 86, the Reagan changed the rules, and now you could get much larger risk pools for the insurance, and our price, I mean, my price, not counting the age discount that I got as I got older,
right.
still was a quarter of what it had been.
Sure.
And healthcare insurance would work the same way.
And that's what Trump tried to do in this first term, was make it interstate instead of intrastate.
Yeah. But again, the problem was, the big problem with it is even if you made it countrywide as it exists, you're still looking at the wrong risk pool.
Okay.
To get this to work, you have to throw everybody into the pool. So instead of getting your insurance through your employer, and they might still give you a subsidy to buy your insurance on the exchange, uh-huh. but you're going to have to go out to the exchange and buy your insurance there. And then that gets us back to more individualized plans for, like, if I were 25 again,
right.
God, I only hope. But, you know, if I were 25 again, I would buy a high deductible plan, because I'm not going to use much health insurance unless I have something going on.
I don't really want to use myself as an example, but I have dental insurance and I have mm-hmm. vision insurance. They're individual, and they're dirt cheap.
Yeah.
Very cheap. But I want to
Because, again, they can buy a lot of people under that plan.
Right. But this government shutdown, I really believe that now that the horse is out of the barn as far as subsidies go, they may not go away completely, but I think they're going to come down quite a bit. Like maybe you have $1,000 a month as a subsidy on your insurance, that, you know, on a bronze plan, for example, and I think it's their share is going to go down. How does that affect you? How does that affect LifePoint?
From the hospital perspective, it's the biggest risk for us is a growth in uninsured. Because the reality of healthcare today, and for a very long time, is if you get sick and you present at the hospital, we are going to take care of you exactly the same way we would take care of Elon Musk. There is no difference in the quality of care that you would get regardless of your payer status.
Right.
So from that perspective, it doesn't change anything. My cost will be about the same. What will happen is if we see a significant spike in uninsured, and I really don't anticipate that, if you want the truth, I don't think the plans hold that enough people, especially in this part of the air of the world, that it's going to be a significant financial hit to the hospital.
What about the impacts to the hospital? The emergency room, for example.
I suspect we'll see it be a little busier, but to be fair, we don't have enough primary care in this area, so we do a lot of primary care in the ED anyway, okay. Which is part of why you hear all the complaints about the length of time, because if you come in with the cold, you're deprioritized over the guy who had the car wreck who's coming in the back door bleeding.
So now you have two sides. The Democrats say illegals aren't getting free health care, and the Republicans say, yes, they are, and the government is paying the hospitals in full for that health care. Which part of that's right?
Neither.
Okay.
So, to be fair, both sides are, again, I think part of it's an attempt to simplify. The reality is...
They always do that.
Right. So, yeah. So the way Medicaid works is the states generate a certain amount or designate a certain amount of money for Medicaid. And in the state of Arizona, they designated X, let's say, and I don't remember off the top of my head what it is. But then they tax all of the hospitals. Okay, and we contribute. And then X plus what we contribute, they go to the feds and say... That's our money, and the feds say, okay, we match that.
Okay.
So that's how that's worked forever. So the feds do not directly pay, generally speaking, for illegal health care. Illegals get it through Medicaid and what's called disproportionate share reimbursement, where, hey, if you do a lot of indigent patients, which most illegal immigrants are, then we're going to give you more money. For example, here in our area, Valley View, because of the demographics in that part of the county, see more indigent patients, so they get a net positive out of the tax Medicaid.
So that comes out of access.
Share. Right.
Okay. With the Arizona health care containment system.
Exactly.
Cost containment system. Okay.
Right. So they give, when they tax all the hospitals, Valley View comes out a net positive on that. Havasu, however, because we don't treat as many of those type of patients, comes out a net negative.
Huh.
Over the system, it's about even. It's about a balance. Little less than totally on our side, but,
right.
You know, that's the way it goes. And so, you know, do I anticipate we'll take a little more of a haircut? Probably, but it's not going to change the care we provide or the real value to the system. But when the Democrats say the illegal immigrants are not getting health care, they're half true. The federal government is not directly paying for immigrant health care. However, the Medicaid programs, California being a perfect example right across the river, absolutely, Gavin Newsom 2 or 3 years ago put the illegals on the Medicaid program. And that's what the feds are saying. We're no longer going to match you money to take care of those people. So it's not going to be a big impact.
The COVID money went directly to that, as I remember.
Again, well.
When the government paid, you know, New York had a huge, I don't know, $50 to $100 million. Remember that?
Oh, I was in Chicago, and I got a ton of money at my hospital.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't related to taking care of people. It was literally, we don't want you to go out of business. Here's a bunch of money. Now show us how you spend it on COVID.
Okay. So it's like quantitative easing in some
way. Right. It really was. They gave us a bunch of money, and it took us, we got a bunch of money in 2020, late 2020, early 21. It took me till I left up there in late 22, early 23 before we were able to justify how we spent that money to justify that it fit within the guidelines the feds had given us.
So now you talked about indigent care and a lot of the illegals being indigent. Wouldn't a person who's a white Anglo-Saxon Catholic like myself without insurance, wouldn't that person be indigent too?
As well, absolutely.
Okay.
So, you know, again.
So those people lose their insurance, your indigent population goes up. Well, people need health care.
Right. But again, to be fair, here in Arizona, and we don't know how this is going to roll out, they clearly have signaled that the California way of funding Medicaid is gone. They're going to be forced to redo it. Arizona is different enough that I don't know we're going to get on the first chopping block, but I do think how we do Medicaid funding in this state will change.
Mm-hmm.
But what should happen, in my opinion, is individually, as we eliminate people from the system who don't belong in the system, I suspect Medicaid will become a better payer for me, more likely to cover the cost of the care, because the other piece of all of this is Medicaid does not cover the cost of me providing care at this point in time.
Really?
I mean, it is a lost lead. We do not make money on Medicaid patients. I want everybody to understand, you will be treated exactly the same whether you have zero insurance or you are Elon Musk and paying out of pocket, you know, $1 million cash money up front.
We have about 8 minutes left, and folks, again, this is a recorded segment. Please do not call in. We can't take your phone call right now. So we talked about a little bit about doctors and the impact to doctors. There's a group of doctors in the Phoenix area that have banded together and said, hey, look, if this goes away, there's a problem. We're not going to have patients. So it's a two-edged sword.
Well, but again, there's also a group of doctors in Oklahoma about 5 years ago when ACA started, or longer than that now, when ACA, after ACA got right. going, that said, you know what?
They formed a co-op.
We're done dealing with insurance companies completely. We're done with all of it. For primary care, it's $25 to come see me. It's $50 for an x-ray, so on and so forth. And because they don't have to do any of the paperwork, they don't have to mess with all the rules that I have to live within for Medicare, Medicaid, all the different insurance companies, they're making money.
I believe that's an unintended consequence, if this does go away, is the doctor co-ops, Michelin Care, as they call it, and possibly like MediShare, when people mm-hmm. sign up for the group insurance through that's through their faith-based. Yeah. Anyway, one thing that bothers a lot of people is explanation of benefits. You don't even understand them, and you're a CFO.
Yeah,
you're the chief financial officer.
Yeah. Well, and I say I don't understand them. I understand them in the sense that
it's like a two-part question. So, do we need explanation of benefits for patients, and should we have legislation maybe to simplify these things, because they're not getting simplified on their own?
Well, number one, we do need it. We need to be able to tell you, here's what we did, this is what your insurance company covered, here's what's, you know, written off because we have a deal with the insurance company, but we make it too complex.
But now there's so many columns, you don't know what you owe.
Right, no, we make it so complex, and again, as I always say, this is what happens when the government puts their foot on the scale.
Oh, if the government created it.
The government creates most of this because they require us to do these things. Uh-huh. And it's much like one of the things that came out that Trump did that a lot of people in my industry don't like, I happen to like, is price transparency. We now have to give you an estimate when you come to the hospital of how much we think it's going to cost you based on your deductible, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is if you're coming in at 3 a.m. on a Sunday night to the ED, I'm guessing. So I get a lot of feedback that, hey, you told us it was going to be $150 and it turned out to be $300. Well, I understand that, but when they got you back there, we needed two more x-rays and something else right. because we found something that we didn't expect.
So the last thing I really wanted to talk about, well, maybe not the last, but something that's – people debate this all the time. It's the Rush Limbaugh thought. Do we need insurance? Does that drive up the cost of health care?
No.
Like he always said student loans – drive up the cost of education.
Right.
You've got a guaranteed amount. Oh, I'm going to go to the best school I can and then come out with a bunch of debt.
And in student loans, it's 100% correct because it's exactly the way you described it. In health insurance, it doesn't work that way.
Okay.
Most people barely make their deductibles every year unless you actually get sick. We need insurance because the cost of care is high. Mm-hmm. And if you get really sick, you need to have somebody in the background to help you out with that cost. And insurance is the logical way to do that. That's why we developed insurance clear back when we were shipping cargoes and wooden sail ships around the world, Lloyd's of London. It's to protect you from the bad downsides.
But a lot of people promote HSAs, too.
Well, there's a lot of different
accounts.
Yeah.
But nowadays, you can't get a health savings account that has so much in it that you can't have insurance
that's just it.
To go with it.
The health savings account, because of the government.
It's nice that it doesn't come out of your pocket,
right, but
though.
Because of the government.
Yeah.
But it did come out of your pocket. It just came out of your pocket pre-tax.
It comes out of a different account.
But
right.
it came out pre-tax.
Gotcha.
But it's money you earned. You're just not having to pay taxes on it if you put it in a health savings account.
Right.
But the problem is you have to use that health savings account every year, so you can't build up enough for a significant cancer, stroke, mm-hmm. heart attack, because you've only got a year to build it up, and none of us make that kind of money.
So the budget impasse as it is now, are hospitals looking at it and saying, are you getting a little nervous because – you know, there's people that, like on the stock market didn't blink
no.
when the government shut down. But the longer it goes, they might blink. Are you guys going to blink at all? Or are
no.
you going to worry at all?
First of all, it's not the first time to this rodeo. And second of all, the reality is we need to clean up the system. And the biggest problem in the system, as in so many places, if you're a capitalist, is the government over-regulating, over-impeding in the market. With the government shut down, it's kind of letting the market roll a little bit. And
see, with the stock market, I'm talking about gold prices, too.
Yeah.
They're going crazy.
Which makes no sense because gold is basically an inflation hedge and only is relevant in.
Right.
There's two situations you ought to buy gold. If you think high inflation is coming, so for example, if Kamala Harris had won, I'd be buying a lot of gold. Number two is if you think the whole bloody system is going to collapse around you and you need something that people will take as currency when the dollar is no longer worth anything. But that's not going to happen in this in our lifetimes, in my opinion.
You were asking me, have I seen the market lately? Go with that.
Well, it's going through the roof, right? Because the government's out of the way. There's nobody bothering them. The basic rules, because none of the guardrails are gone. And the same thing in healthcare. None of the guardrails are gone. You show up at the hospital, I'm still going to take care of you. Mm-hmm. Am I going to, you know, be able to maybe invest in some newer equipment this year because I'm a little worried about where the money's going to come from? I might have to delay some of that, but right now I'm not planning on it.
So the original question, do we really need insurance, health insurance?
Yes, because, again, even in a rational world without the government, healthcare is expensive. I mean, we're putting a new MRI, just to give you an example. We're upgrading and putting a new MRI in our hospital.
Okay.
That's $3 million.
Whew. Okay.
Just to put that in.
Right.
You know.
How long does it take to pay for that?
About 5 years.
Okay.
And that's kind of our window. If we can't pay for it in 5 years, we don't do it.
Does the technology upgrade after 5 years? Probably.
Some, but one of the nice things about, like, modern technology, mm-hmm. This one we're getting a huge upgrade because we're actually getting a new magnet. But a lot of the upgrades nowadays are software.
Gotcha.
And so, you know, the cost is not nearly as high when you're just talking about software versus equipment.
So, in Japan, for example, the Japanese system, are you familiar with that?
Not really the Japanese.
The government came in and said, this is the cost of an aspirin. This is the cost of an MRI. An MRI in Japan is about $120 mm-hmm. cash, out of pocket. There's no insurance.
Right, but the flip side is here, I'd say I probably get about $125 for an MRI, too, after all the deals get done and sideways. And that's the problem is
it's nuts.
We've lost the transparency in the middle. But the reality is we're not really paying any more than they are. And I'm going to hit this one because I have to. Everybody always hits you up. Why is it a $500 aspirin, right?
Well, is it?
No.
Still?
Technically, I probably charge $20 for an aspirin if I went back and looked.
Okay.
Right, but the reason I'm charging that is I can't. So the government tells me what I can and can't charge for.
Sure.
And it's been going like it's been shrinking my entire career. I've been in this 35 years, and what I can charge for as a hospital has gone from I'm holding my arms out past shoulder width, and now I'm down to about 2 inches. Mm-hmm. So. As we can charge for less items, all of the costs that go into that. So for an aspirin, going into the price of the aspirin is the nurse who gives it to you, the pharmacist who dispenses it, the person who brings it up to you.
Gotcha.
You know, and then somebody to do the paperwork on all of that.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of the cost is on individual items, but then it's not directly related to that item.
Oh, all right. Again, Doug Sega, sir, the CFO for LifePoint Western Arizona Region. I'm going to go right from the music to the magic of the board that I'm working on, and we have Coach Carl Thompson on the phone. Hey, Coach.
How are we doing today?
What's this? You're on break. So does that mean your players are all eating ice cream right now and they're not practicing, or what are we going to expect tomorrow night at Deer Valley?
Well, you know, the kids don't have school this week, but we've had a great week of practice. We've been on our normal schedule, at least of the football portion of the week. So it's been a good week of work for the Lake Havasu football team.
All right. So what are your strengths right now going into this game? They're a little bit lower ranked than you. They're right about the level of a Buckeye Union, which kind of gave you guys a pretty good fight until you exposed some weaknesses. What do you think about Deer Valley? What are you expecting?
Well, we expect a real heavy pass attack this week, more so than we saw last week. They will commit to running the ball some in their counter game, and a little bit of the draw action. We expect a lot of screens. So again, we're seeing a more of a spread, true spread or air raid offense, trying to throw the ball around to their receivers. Quarterback has a real quick release when he makes his decisions. And they have a pretty big offensive line. Defensively, we're expecting to see a 3-3 stack defense with principles of cover two and cover one in there. So, you know, a lot of the same things we've seen throughout the year. You know, we've just had, like I said, we've had a really good week of practice doing that. We've got a couple more guys healthy, a couple more guys in the mix to get reps. And, you know, we're seeing each week, we're gaining depth by guys, you know, staying true to the process of working through what we've been and getting more game time reps.
Are you happy with what you saw last week out of your team?
You know, we were. Defensively, the first half, we did a lot of it. We were super aggressive. We did a great job of stopping the run and kind of forcing Buckeye to throw the ball against us, which wasn't one of their biggest strengths. I know they've had a little bit of a quarterback shuffle this year. But I thought early on our defensive line and defensive front really was aggressive against the run, and secondary did a great job coming back in with two interceptions to keep the turnover margin in our favor. Offensively, you know, we had a tremendous output. We, you know, it was a good run-pass combo. I think we threw for over 300 yards, and we came back and rushed for over, I want to say right around that 240 mark.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of offense, very balanced. We kept them guessing. You know, again, same thing in our run game with a lot of the RPO action. You know, Tripp did a great job making the decisions, and Tristan and Kyle Crow did a good job running behind that offensive line.
Yeah, you're talking about aggressiveness earlier. Got a little bit out of hand, I would say, a couple times. You had some personal fouls, some late hits out of bounds. What do you do? How do you get through to those players that make those silly mistakes with the personal fouls?
You know, it's hard. I mean, a lot of times they're being so aggressive and they're trying to make positive plays.
Right.
I mean, it's, again, we talk a lot about playing to the whistle or through the whistle. Sometimes it continues a little bit, and it's really hard on those sideline plays. The two that we had both happened to be on the Buckeye sideline, so you guys had great views of it.
Uh-huh.
It's just that, you know, aggressiveness, and sometimes our guys coming downhill playing super hard, and sometimes they lose relation of the sideline trying to track the ball carrier. That's going to happen. I'm okay if it's a hustle play and something like that, and I think we've done a good job of minimizing our penalties to things like that versus getting caught up in after play stuff,
you know,
a little bit of trash talking, a little bit of pushing, shoving. We've done a good job of keeping that part out. And, you know, you can't fault the aggressiveness of trying to make a play.
No, I get that. And, again, we are talking to Coach Carl Thompson. Havasu at Deer Valley tomorrow night, kickoff at 7 on 980 AM and KNTRSports.com. I only have a few seconds, but I say unleash the kicker, man. You got Spencer Ibarra. We know he can kick. I don't know where all these squibs and line drives come from, Coach, but I'm going to wish you luck for tomorrow night.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay, you got Steve Greeley and Bill Beckman on the call, so be nice, all right?
All right, sounds good.
Thanks, Coach. We appreciate it. All right.
All right, thank you.
You betcha. All right, I'm going to take this one up to the top of the hour. We'll see you Tuesday on Speak Out.
This is KNTR Talk, KGJJ HD2 Laughlin. Heard on 106.7 FM, 106.5, and 106.3. The voice of the free.